this is J.D. Doyle, and welcome to Queer Music Heritage. And part two of this month's show brings you interviews with Chicago artist Dylan Rice and this Australian artist, Brett Every.
Hey there, say hello while you're dancing alone. And why you choose such a sad song? He said, baby, my Navy ship sails tomorrow, and tonight might be my last one on solid ground with a jukebox and that 80s sound. So come wrap your arms around and say, two glasses of whatever you got, two glasses of, 'cause our baby, his Navy ship leaves tomorrow, and that leaves us just 8 hours more on solid ground with a jukebox and that 80s sound. So just one more out and say you'll stay. I'll be here on the other side of tonight.
That was a bit of the song Sailor from the 2008 album by Brett Every called Camping Out, and there is a bit of camp element to this artist's music. His bluesy lounge singer style might remind you of Tom Waits, but this time from a gay perspective. I quite liked the first album, and when he released another last year called Fairy Godmother's Gone to Vegas, well, I just had to contact him for an interview. And I started by asking for a quick overview of the new album.
The second album really tries to approach relationships and gay relationships and friendships from an angle that's often not told, or from a unique or different viewpoint. The situations or the stories that unfold hopefully are new or refreshing to hear about and keep the listener, you know, thinking and guessing and wondering what might happen next.
Your style is very interesting. Could you talk a little about that?
In terms of writing style, I guess I've been influenced by many people and mostly in ways that I don't think are very obvious. I think I learned to play guitar by just listening to the Indigo Girls, and I learned my way around a piano from listening to Tori Amos. But I don't think we sound anything alike. You couldn't spot that one. Great singer-songwriters have influenced me, and mostly female artists. Anita Franco, Maria McKee, Joni Mitchell, Stevie Nicks, Katie Lane, Patti Griffin, Emmylou Harris. And I know I sound nothing like any of them, but their influence is in there somewhere. It's in the blood, I think. And so I guess I start out with them, but with my throat, it ends up sounding a lot more like Tom Waits or Leonard Cohen. And I've really grown to love their writing too. So it's a mix. I used to write, you know, these labored, intense, earnest kind of real singer-songwriter kind of songs, but I've loosened it up a bit lately and I'm having a bit more fun with the lyrics, with the stories and with the music itself. There's more of a swing to my stuff now, and I describe it a bit like Norah Jones drinking with Tom Waits in some smoky bar somewhere with Dusty Springfield on the jukebox or something like that.
Before we get to the songs on the new album, there is one from the last one that I just can't not ask about. It's called Devereaux.
It's a little duet with a lovely Sydney vocalist, Justin J. Bear, who can just sing anything. He reaches notes that I'll never get near. And he came in on this song and it just worked. It's a slightly quirky duet because it's not a love duet. It's just these two guys are neighbors, probably have never met. They're just both at home, wasting time in their own ways. One's listening to Tom Waits, one's listening to Bette Midler, one's watching reruns of The Golden Girls, which may in part be autobiographical. And I always knew watching that show growing up that Blanche Devereaux was just, fabulous. So I wanted to write a theme song for her. And sometimes when we play it live, we end it by breaking into the Golden Girls theme song, Thank You for Being a Friend. And inevitably, it turns out to be a sing-along because there's just no one who doesn't know that song.
Blanche Devereaux.
theme song to the Golden Girls.
Brett Everly's new album, as I said earlier, is called Fairy Godmothers Gone to Vegas, and the song that contains that lyric is called Prince Charming.
Prince Charming is a funny one. I had some people almost killing me over this one. We had the song ready all along, but for some reason I just didn't include it on the first album, Camping Out. So once I brought that CD out to friends and to people who knew the song, they really went to town on why the hell wasn't Prince Charming on the album. So this time around, for the second CD, we were sure to include it. And when you've been playing a song live for a while, you get kind of extra worried when going into the studio because you want to make sure that you capture the energy that you've had when you've been playing it live. So we knew it inside out as a song, but had to make sure that we captured it right once we were in there. Charming can do. Your fairy godmother's gone to Vegas. She's falling for some guy who says he's Elvis. Give me 2 minutes alone with him. I'll prove him wrong. But back to your boy in your teacup store. What your last two exes said before they wore out together through the swing and a holes of your college door. So don't explain away or your way out of this. Don't evade the blame. As it comes around, it will, it drills like the little birdie on your windowsill. But back to your boy in your teacup store. Shadow falls, so yes it does. And running boy, you won't outrun it. It follows you, it's always gone. And the ghost of who you wanted, he will haunt. He will haunt. So if it's him you want, then don't explain away. Don't evade the blame.
windowsill, and the fact that this boy loves you still, and perhaps he always will.
So let's not all your dreams come true. There's only so much your Prince Charming can do.
That was Prince Charming. I really liked the gay pride element of the song Mr. Smith.
I was really excited when the song Mr. Smith came round. The fun part of being a songwriter is you never really know what songs are going to magically appear next. So when I wrote this one, I was really happy. It just seemed to work straight away. It's one of those songs that's simple and straightforward. But there's also a complexity to it, especially in its story. It's great when a lyric is both really specific, it's a small, specific story, but at the same time it's bigger and more general and universal. And with this one, our young man has been found out or caught with his boyfriend, by his boyfriend's father, Mr. Smith. And it reads like a letter, with him apologizing to Mr. Smith, you know, for slamming the door, for raising his voice, and, you know, for all these things. But the crux of the song is that he says, Mr. Smith, I'm not going to apologize for the fact that we're in love. And I like that. I like that our man is very specific about what he's sorry for and what he's not sorry for.
Mr. Smith, I am sorry for the way your front door slammed. I sure hope you understand. Mr. Smith, I am sorry for the fact you hurt your wrist, but it was your wallet, your fist. Mr. Smith, I sure am sorry for the fact my voice was raised, but sir, you just weren't listening. Is in mine.
Almost all the songs on these two albums are Brett Avery originals, with only two covers on each CD, and he picks those songs carefully.
This album has 9 songs that I wrote and 2 songs that I didn't write, and one of those is a cover of one of the handful of songs that Bette Midler has actually had a hand in writing. So it's an old Bette Midler song called Come Back Jimmy Dean. And it's from her No Frills album in the early 80s. And I first heard it on YouTube. There's a wonderful clip of Miss Midler performing it back then on Carson. And straight away, I just knew it was a classic song. There's a real old-time feeling to it. And her performance is brilliant. And I really wanted to record a male version of the song. I mean, I know she's recorded a few Tom Waits songs back in the 70s, and I guess I just wanted to record one of her own songs in a Tom Waits kind of way. It's perfect for that kind of feeling. And I sent a version of what I wanted to the wonderful Lance Horn, who I'd met when he was out in Australia last year. He was playing for Justin Bond at the Sydney Opera House. And yeah, he's wonderful, an amazing piano player and a great singer, songwriter and arranger as well. So I was just so thrilled when I heard what he was bringing to the song. He plays piano on it and sings wonderful backing vocals. And it was just a great experience. And yeah, it would be brilliant if someday Bette Midler ever ends up hearing this actual recording. I really hope that she'd like it. And in terms of songwriting, it just makes me wonder. It's such a great song. I wonder what other songs she might have for us up her sleeve. It's true.
chimney sweepers come to
Very nice. Come back, Jimmy Dean. I've got one more song to ask him about. It's called The Fire That Was Never Lit.
I'm so glad you asked about this song. It's one of those songs from this CD that I'm most proud of. It came out exactly how I had hoped it would, and that's a great feeling. Basically, it's a song about unrequited love, about that kind of crucial, horrible moment when you realize that the feelings you've got for someone aren't mutual. In this song, I'm realizing that the guy doesn't feel the same way as I do. And I get that, and I'm kind of resigning myself to it. But at the same time, I'm also asking him to, you know, just let me linger a bit longer in the dream that maybe it could work, even though it can't work. Just let me not wake up from that dream yet. And all of that sounds very sad, but it's a bit lighter than that. It's more bittersweet, especially the line where I say that, you know, out there there's a lucky girl who's going to be lucky enough to have you, because I know it's not going to be me who gets you. And I know unrequited love has been written about before. It's nothing new. But for a guy, it's usually because the girl is in love with another guy. But the twist here is that the object of my affection is a guy, and the reason it's unrequited is because he's not going to fall for a guy. He's straight. So, yeah, it's a new angle on an old concept in love songs, I guess. And what I was most happy about with how this turned out is that I think we got the atmosphere that we were going for. There's a real kind of mystery or intrigue to the sound of this song and the instruments and the way it's played, and it really matches the lyrics and the story, and that's a great feeling when that happens, when it matches.
Song that no one's playing, because the song we never wrote. But still a swirling dream, it's a swollen moonlit scene. And if I'm dreaming, then I don't want to wait from it.
Again, I've been featuring the music of Brett Every, and you can learn more about him at www.brettevery.com.
Look into my eyes, tell me that I don't see what I see. Preacher in disguise, could it be you don't know what's inside of me? I'm just like you, I'm in search of the truth. I'm just like you, I'm in search of the truth. Yeah, I'm wrapped up in desire. We don't have the time.
My favorite song from the first album is Just Like You. Could you talk about it?
Yeah. Just Like You is a song about the dangers of having a conversation about religion when you're having drinks at a bar. I look back on it, the lyrics, and I think the speaker is in some ways a little too righteous, almost saying, well, kiss off if you don't like the fact that I'm not a Christian. It is a very defensive voice. And when I wrote the song, it was like probably 8 years ago, I think I was, in some ways, I needed to defend myself. I guess if you look at a song as in a moment of time, a slice of time of an artist's career, I think it's fair to say the song was brash and punky and rebellious, and I had to get that out of my system.
The second artist I want to cover in part two of the show is Dylan Rice. He's a Chicago artist who got a lot of attention with his debut album in 2004, which made the Advocate's top 10 indie CDs list. It was called Wandering Eyes, and to use the description from his website, it's a playful homage to the world of scorned lovers. You just heard him talk about one of my favorites from that album called Just Like You, but we're going to talk mostly about his brand new album, and I had to ask him about its interesting title, Electric Grids and Concrete Towers.
The title, for me, evokes a sense of being dwarfed by the largeness of my surroundings, and in some sense, feeling a sense of loneliness, but also a sense of awe of these giant structures that basically create sort of a weird natural world when you live in the city, as I do.
How would you describe your music?
My music is a cross between nostalgic Britpop from the 80s and folk Americana. So it's sort of like if the Cowboy Junkies had a love child with Morrissey, maybe. Strange bedfellows, but I'm definitely intrigued by storytelling, but also the pure, unadulterated tones that you can create with your voice without even saying the word. If a simple ooh and oh can say almost so much more than the lyrics in some ways.
In 2004, with your first album, I asked you that same question, and you said your music was rootsy rock and roll for crooners.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think that I was trying to package it a certain way, and this new CD, to me, I'm exploring different directions, and I'm kind of proud of the fact that it can't be neatly put in a genre. It is pop rock, but there's elements of jazz in there. There's elements of blues. There's elements of folk. And I have to keep things interesting for me creatively because I need to grow and change as an artist. But as far as subject matter, I think that there's a lot more explicitly gay subject matter in these songs than the first CD that I put out. And I also think that I'm closer to finding my writing voice. And I'm not writing so many depressed love songs anymore. I'm branching out.
It may be a little early, but what song from the new album is getting the most attention?
Ooh, probably there's a duet that I do with a Polish jazz singer. Her name is Grażyna Augustczyk, and she's Chicago-based. And the song is called Eggshells and Landmines. Everyone I've talked to who's heard an advanced copy of the CD has said that is like a favorite song. The song itself is basically a call for peace between two friends or two lovers or two members of a family. It's about a dynamic where one person is always walking on eggshells around someone else's temper. And for many years, the person walking on eggshells was sort of held hostage by this person's temper. And so song is like, you know what? I love you, but I can no longer walk so gingerly and so, in such a constantly stressed out, frightening way. So it's, you know, how do you approach someone you love who sees red and who scares you, you know? And it could be, interpreted all sorts of ways. It could be, you know, like I said, between friends, between lovers. There's also, in the title's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's, I was trying to think of, like, what's the opposite extreme of eggshells, you know? Probably landmines. And how eggshells seems very harmless kind of metaphor, whereas landmines is war zones. I wanted to create tension between the two metaphors.
I took on the whole lot of you. The list of fears. If you ever knew every grief I own, you'd blow up in your shroud. If we could walk to another place from eggshells and landmines, if we could talk.
Probably knew I would ask you about Homewrecker's Lament.
Yes, Homewrecker's Lament, believe it or not, is not autobiographical. It is a gay straight love triangle. It is a very sarcastic song, I will give you that. I probably wouldn't have written it now, you know, because I wrote that song about 4 years ago. But at the time, I was kind of angry about the double standard of, well, he's a homewrecker or she's a homewrecker, for the obvious reason of, you know, the other person was a willing participant, and why do gay men who come into a situation where there is maybe a heterosexual marriage, why does a gay man become the homewrecker? So I was playing around with that, framing it in kind of a Morrissey-style, sardonic way. And the voice of the homewrecker who's singing the lyrics, you know, the voice of the song, is disingenuous. Sending a mixed message. He's talking to the man he's in love with. He's talking to the wife who was in the middle of it, and he's saying, you know, if you see him, if you see her, tell him I love him. Tell her he loves her. Sort of this mock regret, if you will. A lot of my songs have these characters that come in and out, you know, and I find the most fun and most mystery in trying to write these monologues, these voices.
Which of the songs on the new album is the most out of the closet?
Interesting. Well, probably Homewrecker's Lament, even though it's, I'm taking on the voice of a character. But as far as explicit gay content, you know, I talk about Homewrecker's Lament, I talk about, you know, being caught on the couch, our legs entwined, you know, a glistening heap. We were finished, you know, like a little more explicit sexually.
He was a good man from a good home until he met me. Started.
tell her he loves her.
Listening to Queer Music Heritage.
Could you talk about the song Rome?
Oh, yes. Rome was written when I was doing a study abroad program in 2007 in Rome. I was there for 6 weeks, and I got to see the gay Roman underground and got to live and breathe it, and it was becoming less and less underground and more mainstream. I mean, at that time, there was a gay couple that were arrested for kissing, like making out on the street. And I was there right when they were arrested and right when there was a protest about it. So it was very exciting to be in Rome in summer of 2007. There's an image in the song that I use, which is, I say, and we kissed like priests in metro stations. I wanted to demonstrate how there's still this double standard where, you know, two men in plain clothes can kiss romantically on the street and get arrested or get a ticket or whatever, but two priests will kiss romantically in a train station. You know, they'll kiss goodbye or kiss hello, and it's acceptable. And I thought that was fascinating, that, you know, the priest could get away with it. So my advice for all gay men in Rome is just put on priest collars when you want to make out public, because it'll be fine.
I'm in your room, looking for an answer to my gloom, looking for a reason of your body. Yeah, I won't be there,
Was called Rome. I've got one more song I want to cover from Dylan's new album, but I want to slip in hearing about another song from Wondering Eyes, the first CD, and I ask him about the song The Lie.
The Lie is a speaker who is in denial that the relationship that he's in is basically over. It's sort of a hypocrisy that I think people fall into when they're in a really bad relationship, but they're afraid to end it. And so they project the frustrations and the anger on the other person. It's like, you know, how dare you lie to me? At the same time, I'm accepting it, and, you know, why the hell am I accepting this lie from you? Yeah, that song's actually gotten a lot of airplay.
That appeared on the Music with a Twist Revolution CD, right?
Yes.
Your first CD came out in 2004,
mm-hmm.
and The Lie appeared on that compilation in 2007. Could you gauge the impact of that inclusion?
Being included on that compilation opened up a lot of doors for me and exposed my music to a much larger audience than I could have ever done myself. It was a huge honor to be a part of it and just to be in the same company as The Gossip and Sarah Bettens and Avery Leader from Israel Olin. And I got to know Levi Christ. I'm really grateful to have that experience.
I saw the light on your lips, hot and burning bright, like a soldering iron. You thought that I asked for this necessary lie, because my love was blind. You don't owe me the lie. You don't owe me the lie. You don't owe me only the lie tonight. But I'm taking the lie. I am taking the lie. I am taking.
Again, the name of the new CD is Electric Grids and Concrete Towers. And let's get back to it and the song Abide by Love.
Abide by Love is probably my most earnest love song. It is sort of a conversation with an imaginary lover. It's basically about two people who think they're in love with each other, but they don't know for certain and they're afraid of it. But the good news is that, you know, you may not know what's going to happen in the future, but at least you know that love is true. And love is the only law we should abide by. So it's sort of a snapshot of we hooked up getting drunk one night and we're confused by this and we don't know what we are, where we are. Are we in love? Are we just lonely but desperate? You know, I was trying to think of a fresher way and more maybe folksy way of saying follow your heart and you will be led to the right place.
I would strive, I was reaching for a psychology, a twist of mind to convince you that you're mine. You said, that's okay, it's time and anyway, we will abide, we will abide by.
I want to step back a bit. Chuck Panazzo sort of took you under his wing, and that's a nice place to be. Could you talk about that and how you came in contact with him?
Yeah, you know, I met Chuck sort of in an interesting sort of backdoor way. I was helping out a friend who was an editor at Paz magazine. I think it was in like the 2001, 2002. I was basically doing some rock journalism because I had done a little bit of that in college. And she needed someone to do a piece on Chuck Panazzo, who had just come out as both gay and positive, and how he was being honored by HRC at that same year. And he was currently based, at that time he was based in Chicago, which is where I live. So I just decided to take the gig and interview him. Not knowing much about Styx, he is actually, in case you don't know, he is the one of the founding members of Styx, and he's the only original member that still plays with them live to this day. So I interviewed him, and we just clicked. We just got along, and we had this very friendly rapport. And I've mentioned, I think, somewhere in the interview that I was a musician, too. And he was great. It was like, oh, well, I'd love to hear your demo sometime. And I was like, wow, he wants to hear my demo. And so, you know, I interviewed him, and, you know, interview came out, and then we stayed in contact, and I think a major turning point in our friendship was when I was invited to perform at one of Scott Free's folk festivals called Queer Is Folk, and they wanted me to perform my own material. But then I had the idea, I was like, well, why don't we invite Chuck to play with us, and what if we did a Styx song? And we had a blast. We did Come Sail Away at the festival, and Chuck played bass on that. And I got to compete with Styx lead singer, which was not easy because that song is really high. And then that was such a success creatively and as far as our friendship that when the Gay Games came to Chicago, I wanted to write a stadium rock anthem, you know, sort of a We Are the Champions, but for the gay set. Because we need one, you know? And I thought, well, who better but to play on it would be Chuck, because you know, his whole career has been based on writing these anthemic rock numbers, you know? And so we got together. I wrote the song. He contributed bass part, and then we did the recording, and then we ended up performing it at the closing ceremonies of the Gay Games at Wrigley Field, which was truly out-of-body experience. 20,000 people, truly unbelievable.
Talk about the song itself.
The song itself is called The Faces of Victory, and I was trying to strike a balance between sort of pop anthem, joyous and fun, and some sort of solemnity, some sort of level of pride and seriousness in that it was 2006. 500,000 GLBT people were descending upon the city of Chicago. It was a historical event that the mayor was endorsing. And I wanted to basically say in the song, like, we've worked so hard to get to this point, and the fact that there are so many of us together in one spot, that is almost a victory in and of itself.
This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Music Heritage, and again, I thank Brett Every and Dylan Rice for the interviews, and you for listening to part two of my show this month. And be sure to check out part three. You can find out more about Dylan at his site, www.dylanrice.com. And of course, I'm going to close out the show with the song Faces of Victory.
By being here, no apologies, you and